Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Ross. How are you?
I am doing fantastic, and I always think it's so interesting how people are, like, surprised that even though I do the Eagles preseason games, when I call a national game, that I'm not, they're two totally different entities. You know what I mean? Like,
no question.
When I'm doing a preseason game, I'm getting paid by the team to call that game, and it's only for Eagles fans. It's an Eagles preseason broadcast. Whereas yesterday, national radio, you know, the reality is there's probably very few Eagles fans listening, right? Because they're listening to the local broadcast. They're listening to Merrill Reese and Mike Quick. So I'm speaking to the national audience. And I actually thought it was a pretty evenly played game. You know, the Packers, the turnovers killed them. The injuries killed them. But certainly the Eagles are going to have to play better than that if they want to get to where they think they have a chance to go.
I'd agree with that, Ross. Good to talk to you. But I also think that when you look at what they were able to do in running the football and controlling the line of scrimmage with that offensive line, it to me was also as impressive as what the Ravens were able to do by controlling the offensive line with Derrick Henry and 186 rushing yards. When you have teams that control the line of scrimmage like the Eagles and the Ravens are able to do, that to me was the most impressive thing about the weekend that was, you know, delivered 3 out of 4 kind of games that weren't as close as you might have wanted, but overall pretty impressive by the teams that won those games.
You know, I think it's a good point, David, in that you look at the teams in the playoffs, and for the most part, they have good quarterbacks, and that's a major factor. But, you know, Texans, Chargers, the Texans with Joe Mixon, by the way, veteran free agent addition that people thought was over the hill, they ran the ball better than the Chargers, which is certainly what Harbaugh wants to do. Saturday night, I was on the sideline for that one, Ravens-Steelers. I still can't believe that. I mean, kudos to the Ravens for rushing for 300 yards, but guys, they had like 250 yards rushing with 6 minutes left in the third quarter. I mean, it could have gotten really bad and really ugly. And it's funny because there's so much conversation about quarterback in Pittsburgh, and they're kind of in a tough spot because they're in a spot where it's tough to get a guy that's going to be able to compete with Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow and Mahomes and all these guys. It's just like, what's the plan? How do you get one? But Russell Wilson actually played pretty well in the second half. What happened to the Steelers defense? I mean, this is the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're paying a lot of money. T.J. Watt and Cam Hayward and Alex Highsmith and Minka Fitzpatrick and Patrick Queen. And, you know, it's one thing for the Steelers to lose. It's another thing to watch that team in that uniform get their butts handed to them as the Ravens run over, around, and through. I thought that was borderline embarrassing if you're a Steelers fan. Then the game's on Sunday. You know, even the Bills with James Cook, they ran it better than the Broncos.
Yeah.
And certainly the Eagles ran it better than the Packers did. But you know what? The Packers ran it pretty decently. I'm so impressed by Josh Jacobs. I mean, that game wouldn't even have been close if it wasn't for Josh Jacobs. So I do think, you know, as we talk about the Bears or just bigger topics, I do think having a good offensive line and being able to control the action is important. You know, the Packers have a good O-line. The Eagles' offensive line is ridiculous. I don't know if you guys probably haven't, but, like, all five of those guys are total freaks of nature. Yeah. Like, total just monsters in their own way. And it's a big reason why the Eagles are as successful as they are. And then I thought last night's game, you know, I think the Bucs have a better O-line than the Commanders do. But Commanders were able to run it enough. Daniel's leg is a factor, and he's really, really special. I do this every once in a while. What goes through your guys' head when you guys watch Jaden Daniels in a game like that last night?
I think that he's going to be a superstar. I think he's doing everything right, but I also worry, honestly, about his durability because he takes some hits when he's going to be that elusive. And I think I wonder about the sustainability of his stardom because he's so prone to being injured because he is so slight.
Well, I think what you're asking is, do we think they took the wrong quarterback in Chicago? I think that's what you're saying.
Well,
did they take the wrong guy?
I am definitely asking that, but I also think David kind of knew that. And, you know, it's so funny because I don't want to put words in your mouth, David, but what I heard was, okay, yeah, he's definitely playing better than Caleb and might be better than Caleb, but he's not going to last that long.
Yes, that's exactly what you heard. Yeah. And that's basically what I'm trying to say is that I don't believe the Bears took the wrong quarterback because I would do it over. I would probably do it over again. So over the course of the next 10 years.
They hired the wrong coordinator and they had the wrong head coach. I think we've decided that. So they really need to get this hire right, and they're having the same people do it.
You know what's interesting? There's a lot of comparisons of Jaden Daniels to Lamar Jackson. And first of all, he's not Lamar Jackson,
right?
Like athletically. But also, Lamar very rarely takes a big hit. Whereas if you go back to the LSU days, Jaden Daniels takes like cartoon character hits. Like he gets master blasted. So that would be a major concern. I mean, I think he's clearly better than Caleb Williams, or at least has been so far. Because watching Caleb, I studied that Caleb a lot for the Packers broadcast. The thing that's interesting to me about Caleb is he's not as explosive of an athlete as I think he thinks he is. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but like when I watch Caleb move, you know, he could do it in high school and he could do it to some extent in college. I just don't think he moves as well or as explosive and as athletic as he probably needs to be to make some of the plays that he wants to make.
That's very interesting comment. I think I'd love to see him get the best possible offensive coordinator / head coach that he could get. I would love to see what it looks like if there was someone that came in here with an offense, with a plan. And I feel like Cliff Kingsbury's done a really good job in Washington this year. I don't understand how he could be one of the candidates here, as was Liam Cohen. I mean, they brought in 9 different guys and they hired the wrong guy. And I think that helped to set him back. And then once they promoted maybe a better option at offensive coordinator, they ended up promoting him again to head coach. And I think that screwed it up again. I feel like they made a couple of decisions that give me hesitation about what they're doing moving forward.
Well, and that's why, and you guys don't need to hear me say this, but it's just so important that they get the right guy as head coach and they get a guy with a proven track record on the offensive side of the ball that can maximize Caleb. I mean, you know, I'm fine with defensive minded head coaches and I'm fine with culture builders and all of that stuff. But this hire has to be about Caleb Williams. You have to get whoever you think can maximize Caleb Williams and what he brings to the table. It just feels like that has to be the guy that the Bears hire.
So when you look at the Bears trying to hire the right guy and you see 19 names associated with the coaching search, Ross, do you look at that as due diligence or desperation?
I look at it as due diligence, and I actually like it. I like the Bears process. Because You know, the way I look at it is these are like multi-billion-dollar organizations, right? And there's a lot of people driving into the city right now or whatever, they're listening that, you know, they got really nice jobs. Maybe they're in finance or consulting or whatever. These big companies, they hire McKinsey or they hire consultants. They pay them millions of dollars to come in, look at their company, and tell them ways in which they can improve. The way I look at it is the Bears, every interview is an opportunity to pick the brain of not only what can the Bears do better or what would you do if you were us, but also, you know, how have you been able to have the success you've had? What are things that you're doing well where you are? To me, it's like you're getting a free consultant, which is why I would much rather have the Bears process than the Patriots process. And I know there's probably some people in Chicago that wanted Vrabel, and I get that. But it feels to me like the second year in a row where the Patriots basically predetermined who they're going to hire as head coach. I mean, last year they had put in his contract that Gerard Mayo was the heir apparent, and they didn't even interview anybody else,
right?
Which I thought was incredibly dumb. I mean, first of all, why not get the free consultants, right? But also, even if you love Mayo, why not interview a few other guys just so you can at least sell it to your fans as, yeah, we interviewed this guy, that guy, and this guy, but Mayo was clearly the best. Now, this year, they interview Byron Leftwich and Pep Hamilton. And I do think they did interview Ben Johnson. So they did get one guy, you know, that one other credible candidate. But as soon as they fired Mayo, everybody's saying, Vrabel, 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 Vrabel. And it was clear that's who they were going to hire. I don't think it's a good process to predetermine who you're going to hire 2 years in a row. I'd rather go about it the way the Bears are.
So, Ross, I'm just curious. You asked us a pretty good question, and you massaged it a little, and you got your answer. Let me turn it on you. Did the Bears draft the wrong quarterback, in your opinion?
Yes. Yeah, I would say yes. Like, I would take Jaden Daniels 10 times out of 10 over Caleb Williams. Now, the reason why I say that is Jaden Daniels is already a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. Caleb is not a top 20 quarterback in the NFL, right? So unless Jaden Daniels takes a step back, what are the odds that Caleb becomes a top 10 quarterback? Now, that being said, the thing that's in the Bears' favor and in Caleb's favor is last year I thought C.J. Stroud had the best rookie season I've ever seen for a quarterback, ever. I mean, to lead the NFL in yards passing per game and touchdown interception ratio, only been done two other times, Tom Brady and Joe Montana, and then C.J. Stroud last year as a rookie. And I also thought Bryce Young was clearly the worst quarterback in the NFL last year. And now this year, I don't know, they kind of were about similar. They kind of were even. So while I would take Jaden Daniels 10 times out of 10 over Caleb Williams, the reality is, let's say Jaden Daniels is, I'm just throwing numbers out there, the eighth best quarterback in the NFL and Caleb's 23rd. I'm just throwing it out there. That's much less ground to make up than Stroud being like fifth last year and Bryce Young being 32nd. And now both those guys might be around 15th or 16th with the way they played this year. So it can happen with the right coaching, but two things had to happen for that to be the case, right? Stroud, C.J. Stroud had to really take a step back, and Bryce Young had to really take a step forward. That would have to be the case again for Caleb Williams to be a better quarterback than Jaden Daniels next year.
Quickly, before I let you go, Ross, really appreciate your time. Two quick questions. Number one, would you have the same answer last April? And number two, tell us about MyFrontPageStory.com.
I did have the same answer last April, David, and I think we've talked about this because for whatever reason, every guy that came on my show either said they liked Daniels more or they sounded like they did. I mean, Greg Cosell and Orlovsky and Lewis Riddick and Phil Simms and Chase Daniel and Sean King. I was actually, you know, I don't go back and watch these kids. I don't pretend to be a quarterback guru. I was really struck. I mean, they all said that Jaden Daniel was the best pocket passer, was the best pure progression reader. We can see he's a better runner than Caleb Williams. The advantage that Caleb had is his unique ability to make incredible throws with ball placement on the move. And I think that they thought that was where Caleb Williams had the edge. But, you know, without studying those guys, David, based on what those guys had said to me, you know, based on all the guys that are quarterback gurus, I definitely was higher on Daniels than I was on Caleb Williams going into the draft last year. And then for my front page story, it's really simple, right? I have a buddy who's a big David fan, and he thought, you know what? Can you imagine how cool it would be if you could have a guy like David write a story about how amazing your wife is for Valentine's Day? That's basically, I'm kidding a little bit, but that's the deal. I mean, you can have the best Valentine's Day gift ever, have a writer, a professional writer, write a story. It looks like it's on the cover of the newspaper, framed pictures of your wife or significant other, the kids, quotes from you and the kids saying she's the greatest wife ever, she's the greatest mom ever. I guarantee your wife will cry and she'll say, this is the best gift you've ever given me. MyFrontPageStory.com, MyFrontPageStory.com. It's amazing.
Awesome.
Great stuff, Ross. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Ross.
All right, see you guys.
That is Ross Tucker. Wow.
You mentioned that you're a builder, but is there anything else you feel that you specifically bring of value to the Cowboys organization if you were to come back here after your contract expires?
I understand why you asked the questions. I don't like to talk about myself that way, but I'll just be clear. I'm a winner. I know how to win. I've won a championship. I won a championship in this building, and that's who I am. So, and we'll see where it goes.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. You don't have to Google him. He'll tell you he's a winner. That's Mike McCarthy
confident.
Talking. And we're delighted to head down to Dallas and welcome in Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. He is with The Fan, 105.3 in Dallas. Bobby, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are y'all?
Doing well.
We're living the dream, and we should mention that Bobby joins us on The Score Hotline. Is brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. So any surprise that McCarthy is gone, and can you explain why last week they wouldn't allow anyone to talk to him, and then they just decided, we'll just pass on him?
You know, it's a surprise in the sense that where things felt like they were heading a week ago, like you mentioned, when they declined permission to the Bears. It's not a surprise in terms of what was he brought in here to do. And did he actually achieve it? And the answer is no. And so I don't think it's a surprise from that sense. I think it's more a surprise to me, honestly, that he hung around after the Packers lost last year in the playoffs, where they just got absolutely embarrassed at AT&T Stadium. But he's somebody who, you heard it there in that clip. You don't have to Google him. He's not Kurt Cignetti. He is going to puff out his chest and believe in his program. But at the end of the day, he didn't make the right difference that he was hired here for. Now, I think that when you're talking about why they declined permission to the Bears last week, it's simple. There's you can look back about 8 years ago to a guy you guys are very familiar with, Matt Eberflus. Matt Eberflus was on staff here in Dallas. Kyle Shanahan had gotten hired in San Francisco and wanted to hire Eberflus on his staff there with the 49ers. Cowboys rejected it with no real intention of keeping him past his current contract. And it kind of frustrated Eberflus and made him say, all right, well, when my contract expires, I'm getting out of here because I don't like the way they do business. But I think it basically just comes down to Jerry Jones feels like that's my employee. I don't care that he has 7 days left. I don't care if I'm still determined if I want him back. As long as he's my employee, nobody else is going to get access to him. I'm going to protect that right.
So if Mike McCarthy does become the next coach of the Chicago Bears, and We're a long way from that, but there are suggestions and even a report that he'll be talking to them tomorrow. What do you think he has left in his career? It will be his third stop. You wonder what the Cowboy experience did to him, but what are the pros and cons of hiring a guy who does have a Super Bowl ring?
I do think that there are things to like about Mike McCarthy. Obviously, you mentioned the resume is a big part of it. I think that for Texas players, players generally like him and will play hard for him. And you're not going to have the Matt Eberflus situation where, you know, Jalen Johnson has issues with the head coach late in the season. And there are all these tense points. That's not going to exist generally with Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy is still very old school in a lot of his offensive approach. And, you know, there doesn't seem to be a rhyme or reason sometimes to his game management decisions. And when it comes to just basic execution issues in terms of pre-snap penalties, but not just pre-snap penalties, we're talking about procedural ones, just lining up correctly. Dallas has consistently in the last couple of years been one of the worst teams in the NFL at stuff like illegal formation, you know, false starts. There's different things that comes with you got to be in position. It's very basic fundamental stuff. So not very detail oriented. A guy who is a great personality to have and who will have guys who really endear themselves to him. But in terms of an X's and O's advantage or some sort of, you know, big time culture builder rather than culture preservation, I don't know that McCarthy is that.
That's interesting because I think that's the stuff they need is to get rid of pre-snap penalties. The stuff they need is to kind of clock management at the end of games, believe it or not. They lost a couple of games because they couldn't figure out how to use their timeouts, when to call them, and how to maintain. It's just basic professional football stuff, right? And sure. I think Mike's been through the wars a little bit, and you would think that that would be a speciality, right? He's a working coach. He was calling his own plays. He has his own offense. I get it that maybe the running back room wasn't great, and maybe they were using things that they shouldn't have, but he is a working coach, right?
So it's interesting. There's a little bit of a disagreement here in Dallas about the credit Mike McCarthy gets for his hand on the offense as an offensive play caller. So that was obviously Kellen Moore from 2020 to 2022 while Mike was here. So it was the last 2 years where it was Mike. And Mike McCarthy in 2023, you can go back and look at the numbers through 5 weeks, which was the San Francisco game in 23, where they just got destroyed in Santa Ana. That offense was stagnant. That offense was not very productive. The passing game was archaic. And there was a switch that flipped the next week into the Chargers game. Then they went to the bye, and Dak Prescott goes on and finishes runner-up in the MVP the rest of the way with the way that the offense played. The discussion at that point is, all right, is that Mike McCarthy or did Dak Prescott kind of take over? Because that's the sentiment you get from a lot of people here in Dallas is that Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, some of the core offensive members kind of pushed back against some of the concepts and said, we can't do this. We're not going to win playing like this. And Dak really took command at the line of scrimmage pre-snap and kind of calling things himself. And so to me, his involvement level is always a question because I think when he's really involved and he's really putting down his fist and saying, all right, this is the way we're going to do things. The offense seemed to struggle. It seemed more like when you had the quarterback kind of in command of the offense is when they had more of their success. As far as the procedural penalties, I mean, you can think over the years here as Cowboys fans do. They think back to Green Bay. Dallas went on the road to Green Bay. Mike McCarthy's first return game back there in 22, I think it was. They lose a game in overtime because Jalen Tolbert just doesn't know where to line up at receiver. He didn't even check in with the official to make sure that he was good. That's in the middle of overtime. They had lost a big lead in that one. That penalty cost him big. And there have been other instances over time where you see, man, this is a crucial, just basic, like middle school football type of understanding that they're messing up. And I understand there's probably a little bit of a grass is greener on the other side mentality for every team that you cover or cheer for, where you say, man, we're so bad at all this game management stuff. I feel like nobody's happy with their game management in the NFL. It seems like it's burning the Cowboys more consistently under Mike McCarthy. I would say that's one of his bigger faults actually would be game management.
Are you referring to clock management at the end of games? Because that seems to be the most easy knock from the outside looking in. There have been a couple instances, and I just and when you refer to also game management, how much did he have in terms of input and control of the roster?
So I think he actually had more input and control on the roster than he realized. A lot of times I don't think he tried to assert himself as much as he probably could have and as much as the Joneses would have let him. So he had his say during draft meetings and would, you know, have an opinion on somebody, but I don't think he ever really sought to assert that. When he was going through the interview process back in 2020, when he went with the Giants, I think he was with the Jets, and then he also interviewed with the Cowboys, he was communicating to all of them that he just wanted to coach. He just wanted to get back. He didn't want to have a hand in personnel. But slowly over time, I think he liked having more of that here in Dallas. But he didn't assert it nearly as often as the Cowboys probably would have let him, which I think to a lot of people, they say, okay, great. You've got Will McClay, your vice president of personnel, who's done a good job drafting and finding steals for you in free agency. Let's let him do that. But the game management stuff, yeah. So clock management late, settling for certain opportunities. There was a game against the Chargers a couple of years ago where he was completely content just running down the last 30 seconds to attempt a 58-yard field goal instead of trying to push it the ball any further. Now, they made it, and so they won that game, and so it didn't end up biting them. But there have been several instances where, man, you're out of timeouts. Why are you out of timeouts? Well, it's because you had procedural stuff that you had to call a timeout for earlier, and then you had a bad challenge, and now you're sitting here, and it'd be nice if you could stop the clock at the end of the game, but you can't. And so clock management, discipline, details, that is one of the bigger areas of frustration, I'd say, for even, you know, big-time Mike McCarthy fans here in Dallas.
You're listening to Mully and Haw on The Score. We're talking to Bobby Belt. He's a Cowboys insider for 105.3, The Fan in Dallas. They've already talked to Deion, right? They had a conversation yesterday. I don't know if that's a formal interview. I'm talking about Jerry talking to Deion. They've known each other. There's a history there. Is he the favorite now to become the next head coach? Where do the Cowboys turn, and what do you anticipate them doing?
And I would be very surprised if Deion's actually in play. I think, look, they're friends, Jerry and Deion. Mm-hmm. And I think that it makes a lot of sense for Deion to publicly be tied to the Cowboys job and be able to say, huh, you know, I just love Boulder so much. That probably does something for his stature and for his recruits and for whatever prestige boost he thinks he gets from the program. Say, look, I turned out the Dallas Cowboys to be here. And I think for...
We lost Bobby there for a second. Yeah. I don't know if Deion is realistic or not. Sounds like maybe there's some hesitation there. But it definitely would be...
So then are they round up the usual suspects?
For leverage. I think I'm curious... Last question I would have for Bobby, if we can get him back, is are they in pursuit, Bobby, with the Deion aside, are they in pursuit of Ben Johnson? Because right. He could be the guy who's in play in Vegas. He certainly is, you know, a target for the Bears, and everybody wonders how aggressively the Cowboys could pursue him.
I think that, and I didn't hear the first part of that, so my apologies. But circling back to the Deion thing, I don't think Deion is a candidate here because of just, I think that's more a checking off some boxes for both sides. I think the lead candidate here is Kellen Moore. And a reunion with Kellen Moore, I think, is the most likely end game here. But I wouldn't be surprised if Jason Witten's involved in this, Cliff Kingsbury's involved in this, John Gruden potentially could be involved in this. And so
Ben
I think
Johnson?
It's
got
to have to either be... Ben Johnson. Probably not. No, probably not. In fact, I don't think they would consider Ben Johnson really at all. They look for two things. One, they want previous head coaching experience. If they don't have that, it's got to be familiarity. So that would be Jason Witten, Kellen Moore. Like, they're familiar with those guys, so they're comfortable making them first-time head coaches. But otherwise, I think you got to have, you know, head coaching experience before they go them that well.
Great stuff, Bobby. Thank you. We appreciate your time, man.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, guys.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to our guy, Jared Payton. He joins us now on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Jared, good morning. How you doing?
Molly and Hall, what's going on, fellas?
You know, we're just marveling at the length and the time that it takes to find the right head coach and how different guys keep being mentioned and brought through virtually. At least you don't have to pay for any airfares. But it's such a strange process, and I'm not sure. I mean, there are good candidates out there. I'm just not sure how it ends up and how we're going to feel about it. But if they get the right guy, no one cares.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what everybody's hoping for, Mully. But, I mean, my hope is that they're doing their due diligence. They're also getting as much information that they can and diving into every single question that they have about their situation going on, about the situation where some of these coaches are at the moment. And I hope they're getting a fact-finding adventure and they're getting all of this, a trove of information that they can use to get this organization back on track.
How would you feel about Mike McCarthy?
I mean, we talked about this last night, David. I mean, you look at his record from, you know, in Green Bay to also Dallas. I mean, I wouldn't be upset, but I don't know if it excites me. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's like the, oh yeah, that's what I've been waiting for. But it's kind of like that. That's the feeling that I get about it. But it would kind of fit what they're looking for, a guy that's done it before, that has that experience, and someone that they seem to feel comfortable with, and hence the reason why they really wanted to talk to him, you know, last week, but got denied by the Cowboys. So I would not just throw it to the side, but it's not that wow factor that I was looking for, if that's the case.
Is there a wow factor left, in your opinion? If you could have anyone, who's your wow?
Oh, Molly, I was thinking about this on the long drive home last night from work. I was like, what am I going to say tomorrow morning? Because I'm like, I know they're going to ask me this question. That first part that I just gave you, I figured that part out on the way home. I guess I don't know. I guess the Ben Johnson situation, I think for me, that hire would probably excite me because of just what I've got a chance to see over the last few years. And then also just kind of the vibe that I get from a lot of people here in Chicago. I'm a realist too, as well, because it comes to a guy that hasn't done it before. And even though I look at his track record in Detroit, he still hasn't been a head coach before. So it's, in some ways, that's right up the alley of what we've known here in Chicago, right? Of giving guys the opportunity to become a head coach, but with that no head coaching experience. And that hasn't worked out. So it scares me a little bit. I'm torn, and I'm also, I can put my hand on the stove too many times. So it's like, you know, does it work out this time? And I think that's what probably frightens me just a little bit. But if there is one name, he's probably the name that still would excite me if I hear the Bears are going to hire Ben Johnson. But I also think of now with Tom Brady in the mix out in Vegas and talking to people, Brady and Ben Johnson seem to be pretty similar in the way that they are as people. And so if Tom Brady's calling my phone and I'm Ben Johnson and I'm getting a chance to talk with him and have conversations with him, man, that'd be hard to turn down or to steer away from a guy, especially how I think their brains work offensively when it comes to plays and their ideas. So I don't know if the Bears can contend with Vegas and Tom Brady. I think that's where he goes.
How much of your hesitation in committing to either a specific candidate or maybe even believing in what's going on is related to any growing doubts you might have about Ryan Poles?
Oh, I mean, the Poles thing, I've been skeptical, Dave, for just, you know, throughout this process. And it's just because of what we've seen, I think, over the last 3 years. And listen, I'm willing to give Ryan Poles a shot to to get this thing right. And it seems like Kevin Warren and that organization feels the exact same way. They feel comfortable with him making this decision. And this is, to me, we talk about decisions in this organization. This one right here is the biggest one in my lifetime of getting this right now. And I don't know. I've always had hesitation. I've always had pause just because of how, like I tell you guys all the time, the timelines here, you know, the not committing to a contract extension with Poles and us hearing about it here in Chicago up at Hallis Hall. It put a lot of question marks over my head. Like, okay, what's going on here? And just knowing how these coaches, these GMs all want to be on the same timeline. And I know we have the vote of confidence verbally from the organization about Poles, but there's just a lot of question marks from decisions that he's made, and no one's perfect. And I understand that, but I think the vision was just to be a little bit further along after 3 years. And I think that's one of the things that gives me pause just a little bit.
Yeah, I don't question that. I think that the good thing about a guy like Johnson is that you would be damaging a division opponent, right? You'd be taking something away from Detroit, even if he ends up going to Vegas, but you'd rather have him here if you really believe that he's been putting together good game plans against other teams in the division. I wonder how you feel seeing the Vikings bow out, seeing the Green Bay Packers bow out and not knowing. I mean, you know, I saw Dan Campbell saying today that Jaden Daniels is really a dangerous player. I think we know that. What's your thought on if the Lions, they're banged up, if they were to lose somehow, they're a 10-point favorite. That's even more points than Notre Dame's getting against Ohio State. So that's a lot of points. I just said that to annoy Dave.
Hey, you did say that. Yeah. I'm all up for taking the points too, Molly. Yes. If it's a good game, you know. So I'll say this about the Packers. I mean, just the way the Bears ended their season, right? And Thomas Brown beating the Packers, first coach to do that in 6 years, big deal. And then to send them to Philly, that just kind of. That made me feel good because I knew that was going to be a tough one. But you know, I look at Minnesota. I mean, they got decisions to make at quarterback. I mean, they have decisions to make now. And last night made it probably, you know, threw a wrench in it for them for a little bit. But then I also think about Detroit and how banged up they are. But they've shown us though, Mully, that even as banged up as they are, they still can find a way. And to me, that leads to the guy that's running the show. And that's Ben Johnson's calling the plays, but Dan Campbell is the one that's overseeing everything. And I think that team really models themselves after their head coach. And it would surprise me if they bow out this early. My feelings is that team is, regardless of how banged up they are, they still – and – a lack of a pass rush too, which in this part of the season, you have to have, they haven't had that since Aiden Hutchinson's been out, and they still have found a way to be able to win. Kudos to Dan Campbell because his team has really followed his lead. And I'd be surprised if they get knocked out and they're not in New Orleans when I'm there.
Cowboys have an opening, obviously, Jarrett. We know that. The Steelers have lost six straight playoff games. There's already national speculation about Mike Tomlin being traded to the Cowboys, or they look into that possibility. So if he is potentially leaving Pittsburgh and you're the McCaskies and have a relationship with the Rooneys, would you at least make a phone call to find out if that is indeed a possibility, or is that just something that would be a non-starter?
David, I would they're casting this wide net, why not? I mean, you just, to me, you never really know. I've had chances of being around Mike Tomlin a couple of times. The past Super Bowl, got a chance to talk with him for a little bit at the commissioner's party, and man, you talk about the respect level. I think that's the issue in with the Steelers right now, when you look at the situation going on, you have a good defense. You also have some young guys on that team, and I think he has somehow kind of maybe lost a grip of and a hold of that football team. I think you do have some leaders on there, Cam Hayward and T.J. Watt, but still, it's not enough to be able to get them over the hump. And there's a reason why maybe his message is running thin in Pittsburgh. So I love Tomlin, and if you were telling me that, I know I always say that it's just not about just getting into the postseason, and you know it's about winning a championship, but. I mean, this dude has gotten to the postseason, like it or not. There's something about what he does, the method to his madness. Maybe something needs to change and needs to tweak, but maybe that's also a new destination for him as well, to be able to kind of start something new. So when you look at a guy and how his voice and when he talks and when he speaks, and last year, I was standing like kind of away while he was talking before I walked up to him to say hello and introduce myself to him to say hello. Man, the people around him, the command that he has, there's something about that, and it was special to see. So yeah, I would why not make that phone call and see if there's any interest there to be able to talk to the Rooney family.
Do you question why there's so many candidates? Do you care about that? Would you prefer if there were 10 as opposed to 20? They've already gotten 9 interviews done. Do you think they'll be able to get enough finished before it's hiring time?
At first, Molly, I was very skeptical. I'm like, why are you doing this? And I'm an avid listener to the score. So they were playing that one clip of David talking about it should be narrowed down to 5. You know, Dave, that clip where you named the 5 guys that you were thinking it should be: Vrabel, Ben Johnson. I think I forgot who else you said in the clip, but I was feeling like that at the beginning. Now I think there's a method to this madness, and I'm just hoping that they get it right. I think they're trying to get as much information as possible, and kudos to them for doing that. But in some ways, it still feels like they still don't know. They still don't know which direction they truly, truly want to go. And I'm hoping they find that out through this process while they're also getting information and feedback, not just on what these coaches want to do for Caleb Williams and how they can impact the defense, but maybe they're also getting a vibe of internally about themselves as well, because things need to change a little bit for them to get over the hump. It's not just about hiring the head coach. It's about getting the whole entire cycle right inside that building so they can figure out a groove so they can get things back on track.
All right, Jared. So before we let you go, we have to ask you about the U paying $4 million for Carson Beck in an NIL deal. Just wonder, is that money well spent, and is he getting so much money because he promises to play all 4 quarters of a bowl game?
Oh, boy.
Whoa.
Gratuitous.
Geez, man.
That's a gratuitous shot.
That was a shot.
I'm just asking, Jared.
Shot right now, my boy Cam Ward. I mean, I'm cool with Cam not playing, but I knew what Cam was doing. I mean, I'm just glad that he
That's fine.
That
he can justify it. It will be the first question he's asked at the Combine, I believe.
He's going to have to answer that. He's going to have to answer a lot of stuff. I mean, even at the Combine, when I went to the Combine, I didn't have any individual meetings, but I was in the main scrum where I got a chance to go around and talk to coaches. And they knew about a fight that I got into back in 8th grade. They asked me about that. So, yeah, if they asked me about that, I know that, it was Jack Del Rio who asked me that question. I'll never forget it in my entire life. Yeah, he's going to have to answer that. With the Carson Beck thing, I really got a chance to watch him at Georgia. I knew what he's all about. It's going to be a little bit different for him, this offense that he's going into in Miami. So he's going to have to change part of his game, because that game is more of a quick game, spread out here and there. And we saw Cam Ward be able to make throws with different arm angles and get the ball out quick. He's my son and I call him Mr. Nonchalant back there in the pocket. So can he change his game a little bit? Because the money can always be well spent, but you have to see the results. And so hopefully they can find a way to get – he's going to have to change his game and get the best out of him to make that NIL deal work. But we'll have to see. I'm all up for spending money because I'm especially at the quarterback position in college football. If you can find a difference maker right there can get you a chance to be able to play in the college football playoffs.
Great stuff, Jarrett. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Jarrett.
Always good, guys. Talk to you soon.
That is Jarrett Payton. That's pretty funny.
That's a good answer by Jarrett.
You went after. And Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. Low point of the season? Oh, yeah. That was a really bad loss for the Chicago Bulls. That was awful, and they were terrible. And there's no need to exercise one guy or one name. I think you need to kind of You need a ceremony of sorts to get rid of a lot of people.
Good morning, Molly. Yes, happy Thursday. Last night at the United Center. I don't know if I'm ready to start the show. I'm still Googling Daquan Plowden, whoever he may be. But last night at the United Center felt like more than just a loss of a game. I think that it felt like the confirmation of a direction for the Bulls. We've been waiting and talking and, you know, debating whether or not the Bulls should do this or do that this year, and asking the question, tanking or competing. Last night they told us, and it's not a tank necessarily, but they told us what they want to be this year. That was their third straight loss at home this week.
Mm-hmm.
To a team in the Hawks,
yep,
without seven guys due to injury, bringing up guys from the G League.
Like the aforementioned Bowling Green star.
He went to Bowling Green?
Went to Bowling Green.
A little Maction. I didn't realize that.
I thought that's why you were bringing
it
up.
I wasn't trying to even bring some attention to my favorite conference. Keaton Wallace. Any relation to Ben? Where did he come from?
This is Maction!
27 points. The Hawks, they get in at 2 in the morning. They don't care. The Bulls have every reason to win the second game of a back-to-back at home, slept in their own beds, come to the United Center, and not a single Bull scored more than 20 points. That looks like a high school box score.
Yeah, that's unfair to high school kids because they usually get up for games.
Or at least they compete. Honestly,
they do. They get up and look forward to games, and they play as hard as they can very often. The Bulls.
So disappointing.
I mean, this has happened before this season.
So disappointing.
Did they think they had won before they walked into the building? Were they just tired? They looked tired.
They looked tired. And it also brought to mind things that Josh Giddey had said a couple weeks ago
exactly
about being too lax or too cool. And there's no excuse for that. And it's surprising a Donovan team can be accused of being not ready mentally and not competing physically to the point where they were beaten by an outmanned Atlanta Hawks team.
He's the perfect guy to identify that sort of thing because he reflects it quite often.
Well, Josh Giddey?
Yes.
Yeah, he did not show up defensively once again. He's got some really deceiving numbers.
Yes.
Because I know that you're consistently, I don't want to say inaccurate, you're accurate in your criticism of Josh Giddey, but it has been consistent. You have not been really swayed by his numbers.
I am not a fan of the way that he plays the
game.
I get it. And the great irony to me is that they traded a guy who everyone was a fan of the way he played the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, don't talk to me about talent and ability. Talk to me about performance in actual NBA games. And one guy leads the league in floor burns and is an unbelievable break-your-rear-end player, and the other guy is not.
So I think when you talk about Billy Donovan, and I'm not going to argue with that assessment because I think the results speak for themselves, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And speaking for themselves means, this is a problem right now with the Bulls. And Billy Donovan, post-game, sounded like somebody who understood exactly where they were in this season and kind of searching for answers himself post-game. Nikola Vucevic tears into his team, according to Ayo Dosunmu, kind of implores his teammates to kind of turn things around. And the Bulls are, you know, they're bad right now. And this week has been very informative, very instructional. And we should pay attention to what they told us. And what they told us is not this year, again. Because, you know, I was at the UC last night after TV, walking around, saw Arturis Karnišovas. He was watching Ayo warm up pregame and very, you know, affable, very friendly. And I just wondered what was going through his head as he was preparing for that game, because the Bulls kind of had to win that to, or at least play better. And Mully, this is the third season in a row at the midway point as we sit here right now where they have no more than 19 victories.
Yep.
They're running in place. The running of the Bulls, indeed.
Yeah. And I know no one cares about this, and I haven't even seen it mentioned, but they're kind of in the same position as the Atlanta Hawks, right? That's kind of been one of their great competitors in the mediocre sweepstakes over the last couple years, 3 years. And they've been neck and neck with who's more awful or who's closer to maybe being good if there were like a series of bad accidents. I just can't stand watching them lose to that team and just be reminded that they're somehow behind them, when the reality is that that's not a team you should ever be behind.
I don't like them losing to that team when they don't even have their best player. And when you compare the Hawks with the Bulls, that is a like comparison, because they have a player in Trae Young who you hear things often associated with what you hear about Zach LaVine.
Yes.
Explosive player.
Yes.
You know, you can get you the bucket when you need it, but not a winning player necessarily. You know, for whatever reason, the label has stuck to Trae Young in much the way the label has stuck to Zach LaVine. And the Hawks come in here, and Trae Young doesn't even play. So you think there's an opportunity. And the Bulls were lulled into that sense of security, a false sense of security. Happens too often with this group. The mix is not working.
The back-to-back, so Lonzo can't play, so you don't have a point guard. I know Ayo's back, but he's been out 10 games with the calf injury. So it is hard. Every time they turn the ball over, they're giving up a bucket. And that's what's hard to watch, is their awful offense, as bad as their awful defense. And it was just one of those games, totally uninspired, totally flat, tired, just not a very good performance all the way around. They never led in that game, right? They were like trailing.
Never led.
From jump straight. It was just god-awful.
On this homestand, they're 1-3.
Yeah, I know.
It's a five-game homestand.
We had talked about, hey, this was their chance. If they were going to be good, they're playing all these mediocre teams. They're playing teams that are either mediocre or bad. The problem is, when the Bulls play those teams, they are either mediocre or bad. That they are the ultimate play down to the level of the opponent team.
You know, the thing that bothers you, and I think it's fair, Josh Giddey symbolizes so much of what's wrong with the Bulls. I think part of it for me is Josh Giddey, but part of it to me is the collective carelessness with the basketball.
Oh, God.
They had 20 turnovers. I don't understand how an NBA team...
It's not just turnovers. It's like... Teams can turn the ball over and then get gritty and get the ball back. Not the Bulls. It seems like every time they turn the ball over, they give up a bucket as a result of it.
Yeah, that is a problem. And they kind of have those letdowns. So it's one thing after another. They're not hitting from three-point land. Coby White has gone cold. And Daquan Plowden, your guy from the MAC, that was his NBA debut, by the way.
Oh, I know.
NBA debut. Against the Bulls. And Billy Donovan, we should listen to a little bit of a clip post-game, because as we discussed this throughout the city and why the Bulls midway through this season are now 18-23 after last year at midway point, 19-22, which was the same record as the year before. 3 years in, midway through the season, They are decidedly mediocre. Billy Donovan kind of knows what that looks like and sounds like.
I think it's just like, listen, the game is going to be played through mistakes. I don't think anybody's intentionally trying to make a mistake, but it's how you respond inside the adversity and the mistake. And the repetitively cannot continue to happen. You know, like I thought one of the things defensively we talked a lot about, and again, it was a quick turnaround for both teams. You know, so there's not like necessarily a lot of prep work, but this is the fourth time we've played them. You know, they're going to get into like a lot of stuff with Capella or Congo where they're going to be back cutting. We constantly kept getting back cut, you know, and we got to at some point get it resolved.
Yeah, I mean, that is a very true statement there. Tell you what, they did. It's like when a team can come in, and again, this is a team, a depleted, completely underwhelming group, and they can come in and do that repeatedly to you.
Well-coached team, the Hawks.
But that there's no pride. There's no pride shown.
That's a problem.
That's not a Quinn Snyder issue or a Billy issue. That is a player. That is a given a rat's behind.
At this stage, it's hard to put that on Billy Donovan, who I think understands why now the Bulls – really have every reason to dismantle and to make changes and to lean into the idea that this will be a second half of the season that'll be in transition. You look at the numbers, you look at the draft class, and now is the best time to make that argument as the Bulls discuss their future in the second half, what to do. And does that change your mindset in terms of what you're willing to accept for a trade for Zach LaVine or Nikola Vucevic or whoever? Patrick Williams?
Sure.
Got it. A change of scenery. His play is begging for a change of scenery. He looks like a guy that is stuck in his development. And you just don't know if a team will want to take on that contract, but he may still have something left. We see it all the time. Guys change teams. Their careers change direction.
Yeah, he was bad again last night. There's no doubt about it. Look. Here's the deal. They're not trying to lose. They're just losing. So what does that tell you?
Which makes it easier to pick a lane.
Yeah, you got.
They have picked their lane.
Listen to what they're saying to
you. Yeah. You don't have to listen. You could just watch.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
But that's a statement,
It was bad. I mean, it was ruined. I really enjoyed it. I saw Mike Bray was a Notre Dame coach.
Yes.
And he's Atlanta Hawks assistant coach. I talked to him before the game. He's really enjoying himself. He is sort of the sage veteran on the Hawks staff. He recruited Quinn Snyder at Duke when he was Coach K's assistant. And it was just interesting to hear from his perspective, the NBA life and where the Hawks are in their development. And, you know, we talked a little bit about what the Bulls are doing, but
is he enjoying it?
He is really enjoying it because it's such a change of pace. You know, I think that there will be opportunities, I think, postseason for him. He's in his second year on the Hawks bench. Maybe he gets back into college basketball. Maybe he just enjoys being an assistant coach, but he looks great. He's in a great frame of mind, one of the more positive guys you're ever going to meet. But he talked just about the difference in approaches to the NBA game in college. And the Hawks are much like the Bulls in that they're kind of just flirting with mediocrity.
Mm-hmm.
He thought it was going to be a tough challenge last night just because they got in at 2 in the morning. The NBA lifestyle, you've lived it.
Sure.
It's like city to city. Where am I when I wake up? And the Hawks come into the United Center, and they look like the team that was well rested and ready.
Yeah, that's quite a marathon, the NBA, and it's
especially right now, like mid January.
These are the dog days of
winter.
The NBA.
You get into the team bus.
No, it's question, like, about it.
It's like 8 degrees.
Yeah, it's cold, and you're in and out of town, and you got to have a bag packed, and you know you're always on the road. It's fun.
On the Bulls, is there anybody who wouldn't, if you have a conversation, I mean, you're not trading Matas Bezelis.
No.
Okay, you're not getting rid of him, and you're probably, I don't know who else would
have
that kind of approach with, but that's about it.
Well, the real problem in the NBA, the real problem in sports is that the guys that you want to hang on to are often the only guys that have any value.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other teams are looking at you the same way that you start looking at your roster. So it is a sad reality that even if you like someone, you may have to trade them in order to throw a sweetener into another deal. So, I mean, like, there are, you know, I think that Kobe has come around. Like, Io is a pretty good dude. I just think that those are pieces in other trades, maybe. I don't know. I don't know that anybody is coming looking for any of those guys, but you might have to throw extra pieces in just to get rid of a salary.
Yeah, I think that's somebody. Probably that's a really good point. The players who might have the most value to you based on the size of their contracts and the quality of their contributions, those are guys you want to keep around, but those are guys that other teams will want and you might have to throw in a Zach LaVine trade a trade for Vooch.
And you've clearly overestimated your star players. They clearly don't command the kind of trade value around the league that mm-hmm. you expect to get in return.
Well, now is the time when, frankly, if that is the case, and I am agreeing with you, but if you have done that in the past, now is the time to kind of let go of that idea, because even if you don't get as much in return for a trade in a Zach LaVine deal or a Vooch deal, you can justify it because I think you're at the point where if you don't get as much in return and you are losing more frequently, that's not necessarily a bad thing because you want to be in the top 10 of this year's draft. Because now is the time, the second half of the season, you start to shift your sights on that.
You are in the top 10.
Want to stay there.
Well, and I agree with you, and I know what you're saying. You want to be in a better position to get a better player. I understand that. I hate that reality.
I do too. But we both kind of do. But
that's where they're at. They
lost three in a row at home.
They're going nowhere.
If they had won three in a row at home, our conversation and tone would be much different this morning.
There might be more panic about they need to get worse.
Well, if they had won the last three games this week, we would have been you and I clamoring for them to be competitive and to cling to this idea that, you know what, that matters in the NBA. But right now, it's hard to make that argument because they're not really giving us reason to. Billy Donovan sounded like somebody who understood that as well post-game. When asked a couple times, and he was asked some really good questions, Casey Johnson, Joe Cowley, they really addressed the reality and the elephant in the locker room, if you will. And Billy Donovan didn't back down. He almost like embraced the idea that, you know what, you're right. We have to discuss this. We understand why it's a topic of conversation. And moving forward, he didn't give us any reason to believe the Bulls won't be kind of complicit in doing the smart thing.
Well, I want to be careful how I say it. They didn't improve. Let's put it that way. And they're at the same position they were at. So obviously, they're in NBA hell.
They're in NBA hell.
And there's only one way out of that.
Let me ask you this, and I think we'll move on because we've
got to. And it's not by getting better.
It's not getting better. Have we? This is something we can talk about later, but because I wonder, we're pretty critical of everything the Bears coaching staff does, and we break down a lot of the Craig Council's decisions. Because we like Billy Donovan and respect the way that he sees the game and explains it, have we given him a little bit of a pass? Do you think that he's responsible in the fact that he's got a team that doesn't always show up effort-wise, and now they had an opportunity with three home games of a five-game homestand, and they have wet the bed, metaphorically. And I think when you look at what this team doesn't do in terms of effort and intensity, sometimes that does point to the coach, and we like the coach. So, but that's been disappointing.
Yeah, I feel like, and we're getting pushback from people. Everybody wants us to start blaming Billy Donovan. I feel like Billy made an adjustment and reacted to the changes made on their basketball team and the fact that DeMar DeRozan is not here. And I've seen them play differently, and I kind of like the way they're playing, given the league and given everything.
The style, the pace.
And yes. And I think that he has responded. I don't expect him to put magic hands on players and make them better than they are or make them fit in better than they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going a flight above him. If I'm talking about change, I think that, I'm wondering what AK is doing. I'm mm-hmm. wondering what his plan is, because it's his plan. And I maybe I got a blind spot, but I've enjoyed elements of this year because of the change in the way the team has played.
I think it's a really good explanation. I not surprisingly, am kind of with you there, because I do believe that Billy Donovan has tried to make adjustments based on the roster that he has, and he stylistically has changed the way the Bulls have played. They responded in time, but they have been inconsistent with results. And we just mentioned the 3 years at midseason, the Bulls have not improved. And the roster really significantly has not changed. And that's on the front office more than it is on the coach.
Is Billy not hitting the right buttons or getting enough out of Patrick Williams? Was Patrick Williams not worth the draft status that he got when he was brought to Chicago?
That's a good debate, but I think it might be 60-40 that he was not worth, maybe even more, 60-40, 70-30, that he was not worth the draft position where he was taken. And he did not have a skill set or the temperament and the approach, intensity, to be the fourth overall pick.
Yeah, it's
bothersome because, you know what? The Bulls, we like Billy Donovan. We thought that maybe they were at a point where we could defend them competing for that spot. But now after the last three games, it's deflating.
Yeah, well, they've deflated, and it's time to get other things going. I never thought Lonzo Ball would come back, honestly. That one has caught me by surprise, and I certainly never thought he would come back as good as he is.
It's one of the best stories in the league.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
And he's a very, very interesting player who can help a team. But, I don't know that he has any trade value.
He doesn't because of the money.
Well, and I don't know that he has any future value.
That's
But it's a great story.
You don't know if you can move him because of the risk involved in taking him,
yes,
and the cost involved in having him on your payroll.
And I would suspect that that if you're another team, you would be like, "Wow, what a great story! That guy's great. I really like his instincts. Move on to the next guy." Like, I don't know that you could. I don't know that there'll be much demand for
him. He would be a guy that if you are going to move him, you would have to probably throw in somebody of lesser value on your payroll.
I don't know that they need to move him. I mean, it's a lot of money.
They've got to move somebody.
Well, they've
got to start shaking things up.
I think we know who they have to move. I think it's, but they need to move on from Vooch, and they need to move on.
But you look at the Nuggets, who were interested in Zach LaVine earlier this year, and Jamal Murray had like 40-some points the other day.
I know.
Like, oh my gosh, okay, can you stop scoring? Because I thought you needed somebody who could light it up.
Could you please?
Could you please be injured?
Yeah.
No, nobody wants an injury.
No, we're not.
But Zach has got a dwindling market, and it's the league telling the Bulls they don't want to make a deal. So I don't know where they go from here.
Yeah.
But we do know they're running in place, and they are in NBA hell.
Yeah. I mean,
tough place to be.
Yeah. But to answer the question as to why I'm not tearing into Billy, yeah, I really like him, and I like the way they play. And I don't know that he hasn't done something different and tried something different. But I think that the problem is that they've had the same players back, and they are no better. That's the problem. And I think that's kind of on the players. A little bit. It's the NBA, man. You know?
It's the NBA.
That's how the NBA works.
With the 13th pick of the 2023 MLB Draft, the Chicago Cubs select Matthew Shaw.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
Fly ball hit to deep left field. This may go. It is gone. Matt Shaw goes deep.
He can play second well. He can play third well. I think, you know, right now, obviously, you know, we're going to give him a long look at third.
1-2 pitch to Nunez. A swing and a line drive caught by Shaw.
How about that? Matt Shaw flashing the leather. Pick it, throw
it. Chicago is where I wanted to go.
To have an opportunity like this, you know, once in a lifetime really is amazing. So, you know, I couldn't be more excited about everything that's up and coming.
If I mention the third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're delighted to welcome in Matt Shaw, the Cubs prospect, joins us now on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Matt, good morning. How you doing?
Good. Good morning. How are you?
Doing well.
We are living the dream, and it's going to be a fun weekend for you at the Cubs convention. What are your thoughts about the way you'll be received? You are obviously a top prospect. You're a man that looks like he has an important role on this team. How much are you looking forward to this, and how do you think it's going to go down?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're definitely looking forward to it. I'm here with my fiance here, so we're definitely looking forward to a good weekend. You know, we've already met some of the fans, and, you know, they're so excited, and everyone's excited. So, my gosh, I mean, it's going to be awesome. I'm actually looking out to the Chicago skyline right now. So, you know, I think it's just a lot of excitement from the team. I know they released some sweet jerseys last night, so everyone's really excited. I'm excited to see the guys, and it's going to be a good weekend.
Well, Matt, welcome to town, and I think it's interesting and exciting for a lot of Cub fans because of what your projected role could be on the 2025 team. We heard coming in you were just drafted in 2023. It's been a quick trip through the minors. What have the Cubs said to you about the kind of opportunity that could be ahead of you in 2025?
It's a great question. Definitely a common question I'm getting is, hey, what are the Cubs saying to you? And my answer is pretty consistent that I hear just as much as about everybody else hears, you know, when it comes to this type of stuff. So as much as I wish I had some insider trading to give you guys, I really don't. So it's really just kind of keep working and getting ready for the season. And hopefully there's an opportunity to play third base. And, you know, it's my job to be ready for that.
So you were the Southern League MVP last year, which is pretty awesome. You're currently number 22 on MLB Pipeline top 100 list. And it looks like there is an opportunity for you to start at third base. At least that is the plan. Are you monitoring what they're doing in terms of different rumors going around? Are they going to sign somebody else? Or do you feel like that's your job?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely monitor. Obviously, I would love to play third base. You sign a big free agent, and all of a sudden, everything shifts. And that's, you know, that's the nature of baseball. It's the nature of professional sports. And I'm well aware of that. But at the same time, you know, I hope that they, you know, have the same faith in me and that they'll at least give me that opportunity to win that job. So, you know, for me, there's obviously nothing in that I can control. I mean, I can't control if they sign Alex Bregman, or I can't control if they bring in whomever. But, you know, the thing I can control is to be ready for the season and obviously to come out strong here in February 20th when we play our first game and rock and roll. So, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking forward to. And, you know, at some point you just hope that, you know, they have faith in you as a player, and that's really all you can ask for.
So, Matt, you were one of the leaders on Team USA in standouts over the winter, and I just wonder what that experience was like and what you'll remember most, and how much your success at that level made you feel more equipped to handle Major League pitching.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we got to play, you know, the Japanese All-Star team pretty much, minus maybe Sasaki and a few other guys. And, you know, I played with obviously some really, really good players, some big leaguer guys that were, you know, on our team. And so it was an amazing experience, you know, being able to be in that environment in Japan with, you know, the fans, and, you know, it was some really exciting games that we got to play there. You know, 30 and 40,000 fans there in the dome, which, you know, is definitely a loud place to play. But it was just overall, it was really nice to get those game reps at third, playing in front of big crowds, playing against really talented players, you know, Venezuela team, the Japan team, and the Chinese Taipei team. So, you know, overall, it was exactly what I felt I needed for the off season, was to get some more reps at third, get comfortable there, you know, hoping that an opportunity like thus far in the off season has presented itself would still be there by the time the season comes around. So, yeah, that's kind of what we're looking forward to.
You hit .412 in that tournament, and you had a tourney high 14 RBIs with 24 total bases. That's like, I mean, you really went off, right? I mean, you really must have felt comfortable playing at third base to lead that team to a bronze medal the way you did.
Yeah, I mean, it all kind of, it definitely, you know, defense is usually what I'm talking about because, you know, it's something I care a lot about. But, you know, offensively, I felt really good. That's something where, you know, offense obviously has its ups and downs naturally, a little bit different than defense. So, you know, that's why I spend a lot more time talking about defense. But, you know, offense for me, just trying to stay consistent. And, you know, we had some great hitters that I got to hit in front of and behind, which was awesome. You know, Chandler Simpson, Ryan Ward, you know, two really talented players. So, you know, it was definitely extremely, extremely fun, exciting thing to be over there. And then, you know, the process of hitting is, you know, never changes, whether you're in Japan, whether you're in spring training in minor leagues, in the major leagues. So, you know, just staying with that process and staying consistent was helpful no matter where I am.
So when you were the Big Ten Player of the Year at Maryland in 2023, it wasn't as a third baseman. This is a converted position for you. Just wonder, where are you most comfortable? And could you conceivably, you know, you said it, you never know how it's going to go on a major league roster. It's still the offseason. Some people could be moved. Would you be comfortable playing any infield position at the major league level defensively?
Yeah. I mean, one thing that you always kind of hope is that you get to train there and spend some time there. And that's been the truth about third base was I've been able to spend a lot of time there and train there and get prepared to play third base, which has been really great. But, you know, I played short in college, so I feel comfortable there. And I played a second a lot growing up as well, so I feel comfortable there. So, you know, I think third base would be my most comfortable at this point in my career, just with how much I've played there over the last year and a half and how much I've practiced there in the last two off seasons. But, you know, I think infield is infield, and if you continue to get reps and get prepared for a certain position, you'll be ready to play there. And that being said, you know, I think you look at our middle infield and you see two of the best middle infielders really in all of baseball. So, you know, it's obviously extremely exciting to be able to play with those type of players who, you know, year in and year out are some of the best defenders in all of baseball. And I really don't think that's arguable by any means. So being able to be with those guys and pick their brain and learn what they're doing is an amazing and super exciting process, especially for a young guy. And then trying to, you know, take that and move it into my game at third base and see how, you know, I can start to grow in different ways from what they're giving me.
So, Matt, you're 23 years old. You turned 23 in November. You're a very young man. And I just wonder, do you watch tape of any third baseman? Are there any old guys? How are you in terms of your preparation? Do you base your game on somebody that you watched? Is the hot corner significantly different than playing other positions? And has looking at particular players helped you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I obviously you watch players like Bregman. I mean, maybe a little ironically, but he won the Gold Glove, and he's an amazing defender and a great player. You watch, you know, obviously the best of our time, Arenado. And, you know, the list goes on of, you know, even going back to A-Rod, who is really a better third baseman than I think anyone sometimes gives him credit for, thinking of him more as a hitter. But, you know, you mix that, and then with USA, getting to be with some really awesome coaches that were extremely helpful and have, you know, 15, 20, 25 years of major league experience on the coaching side, which is really special. So for me, that was awesome to pick their brains. And honestly, they gave me a lot of good information that, you know, kind of helped me to, there was a lot of areas that I wasn't as well-versed as I wish I was. But going into that, they started to kind of help me work through some things and add some things to my game at third base. And that was extremely helpful. So, you know, mixing that with watching players and kind of taking all the information, kind of putting it into one plan at third base, you know, because everyone feels differently. So putting it into one plan that makes sense for me is a process. But, you know, I think that especially the USA event really kind of helped take that process to a new level for me, and that was exciting.
So, Matt, if this thing goes a certain way, you're going to be on the north side this spring, according to your best plans and scenarios. So how familiar are you with Chicago? Have you been here before? What do you like about the city? And did you get in town early enough last night to head to Evanston and see your Terps lose at the buzzer?
Oh, my gosh. No, I didn't do that. But I'm not honestly super familiar with Chicago yet. We're exploring today. We're going to a coffee shop. We're doing a couple things. I'm walking around the city. And, you know, there's only so much in this frigid weather you're really going to go explore right now. But, you know, I am really looking forward to, you know, some of the eatery and the different places and the history and the river and kind of everything. You know, I think my fiance Danielle and I are super excited about everything about this city. I mean, it's clean. It's, you know, the fans are great. It seems like a great spot to be. So, you know, from what I hear, it's the place to be. So I'm really, really excited to go explore.
Yeah, today's the day. They say it's going to hit 43, which is really high temperature here because it's going down to zero the next couple days.
It might be colder on home opener.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope not. Oh, my gosh.
So help us out as we sit here and we talk to you about this. What is it like? I mean, you've obviously devoted yourself to baseball and you're a young phenom, and we know that this must feel kind of inevitable to you that you're going to be there and playing in the major leagues. Do you feel like you're living your dream? Do you feel like this is going about the way you thought? You did, like we mentioned, the MVP with the Smokies. You moved to two different minor league systems in 1 year, and you keep exceeding expectations, and now it looks like they've even cleared out a spot for you to start. And again, we know that many things can happen over the course of the next couple of months, but what is it like for you to know that you've done something to this point where your professional career is now beginning?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's what you dream of as a young kid. You know, I always had a lot of belief, you know, that things would eventually work themselves out, you know, no matter how rocky the past may be and ups and downs. And there were plenty, you know, in high school and as a younger kid. And you know, I started to build some momentum pretty early on, which is obviously great. But, you know, as much as you can never ever guess where you're going to end up and what your timeline's going to be and all that stuff, you know, just sitting here now, just a, you know, a few months before the season starting, and, you know, especially being here in Chicago, looking at this city, you know, it's really obviously super exciting. And I feel really, really blessed to be here. And so, you know, there's nothing but good vibes over here and looking forward to the season starting. And obviously, you know, I do feel really, really thankful for how everything worked out, you know, for me being in a position to hopefully play in the major leagues with the Cubs, for, you know, hopefully being in a position that there is an opportunity to play third base. You know, I don't think everyone has that coming up through the minor leagues. You know, things happen, you get traded, you know, people come in, and of course that's always still may happen at times, but you know, I think that this opportunity in this place where I'm at, you know, mentally and physically and, you know, emotionally, really, is just a really good spot. So, you know, I'm really excited. I know my family's excited and my fiance's excited, and, you know, it's a good position to be in for sure.
Enjoy every minute of the weekend. Welcome to town, and yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun.
Great talking to you, Matt.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. Nice chatting.
That is Matt Shaw.
Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us now on the Score Hotline. Brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
So we were having a little chat. I know the Bears had a day of rest. Is that accurate? I don't believe that.
Yeah, it sounds
I think they must have done the college guys, right? You can't stop in the middle of this. Do you think that maybe a Matt Campbell interviewed yesterday?
No, I think Campbell was one of the first guys they talked to.
Okay.
I've got a relatively high degree of confidence in that regard. I figured you guys were talking about what Sammy's big apology is going to be this weekend.
Wow. He already apologized. He's
going right in.
But what did he apologize? I mean, what did he apologize for? Right?
It was accepted.
That's a good question, Brad. You want to come and do the interview with us? I mean, we get your credential.
What would your question be to him?
You couldn't get me there if you sent a limo.
You are quite chesty the morning after.
What about
Ovechkin
a helicopter?
Those goals.
What form of transportation?
No form of transportation to get me there. But like, that's like if your kid comes to you and they apologize. Okay, well, what are you sorry for?
This is a football interview, pal.
Okay.
You want to ask Sammy a question? Get a ticket.
I got all kinds of thoughts. I mean, we could go till 10 o'clock on this. But
all right. Well, we respect your curiosity. But tomorrow, 10:40 on the score. You'll be listening. We'll have the Sammy interview.
I'm looking forward to the Paul Sullivan breakdown of the whole thing. But what football stuff should we tackle here?
Let's talk about the Bears coaching search. And whether they've reached a sort of, I don't know. Mike McCarthy is clearly different than other candidates. I don't know much about whether he insisted on coming in or they wanted to bring him in, but they flew him in. They talked to him. That's different. That's an outsider, an outlier, I should say, in terms of the other ways they've operated. Are they going to go through this entire thing and wait till the last minute, or could they end this at some point if they felt they found their guy?
I'm sure if they felt like that they had their guy, they would move. But I believe they want to get through some guys that remain on the list here and then probably spend the weekend to kind of evaluate the next steps in terms of, okay, who is there, someone that through the league rules we can talk to a second time beginning Monday that we want to do that with, right? And Ben Johnson can't be that guy unless Detroit loses. You can't have a second meeting with Ben Johnson if Detroit wins this week until after the NFC Championship game, that extra week between the title game and the Super Bowl, he would be available in Detroit, or, of course, if the Lions lose in the NFC Championship game, he'd be available after that. But you're not having a second meeting with Ben next week. I think there's probably been some confusion for people out there in regard to that the January 20th date is the first time you can talk to anyone that's employed by another NFL team. So, for instance, Mike Kafka, Drew Petsing, their teams haven't been in the postseason. Monday's still the first chance you could meet face-to-face with them. I'm just using their names off of the list, like a couple guys they talked to earlier in the process. But Ben Johnson, because the Lions could still be available in the playoffs, separate rules to talk to him altogether. And same for Todd Monken or Joe Brady if their teams advance. And obviously one of those, one of Brady and Monken will be going home after Sunday night, which that should be a whale of a ballgame.
So, Brad, we were talking earlier and just wondering if you could offer your informed opinion or educated guess, whether it's Ben Johnson, and I think that would be the top of the scale, or, you know, Mike McCarthy, maybe in terms of plan B, what would be the salary range that you guess that these guys are either seeking or the Bears are willing to go?
Oh boy. Yeah. I don't know. And that's the crazy thing. Like, there's no salary cap on coaches' salaries. Right. And they're not public. So you kind of, you can talk to agents and maybe get a feel for what guys are at, to me, the incoming, like the going rate now is probably entry level here. Entry level is got to be north of $5 million. Like there are coordinators in the league now without question making $4 million a year. Like how much more than that? I don't know. But there's multiple coordinators in that range. So, you know, if Ben Johnson's got leverage, he could, I don't know. I'm, you know, are you, does the number start with a one? Does it get close to that? Maybe. McCarthy has got a ton of experience, so I think you got to pay for that. But again, is there leverage? Like, do the Saints want him? Like, that could drive that price up. So it's going, however you slice it, it's going to be an expensive proposition for the Chicago Bears, as they're going to be paying in 25 and 26 their new coach when they're also paying off the final 2 years of Matt Eberflus's contract, which had to be north of $5 million a year.
Yeah, I always wonder about that, and I think that, you know, there was a report that the Raiders aren't going to be outbid, and they gave Gruden a ton of money. So I think that would indicate, I just don't want anyone going on the cheap. I don't know. I don't want anyone looking for a bargain, even if they have to pay off another coach, right? Those are, to me, that's cost that is gone. You can't control that. And you got to just be in the right ballpark. And I feel confident that they will be, but because I don't think they're necessarily cheap or anything like that. But that is always going to be something people wonder.
Well, the Bears, through decades of behavior, earned that skepticism, right? I mean, for like a long, long, long time, they absolutely earned that. So they're going to have to wear it for the foreseeable future. And it's going to require actions, not words, but they haven't been shy about spending money, in the, you know, long time I've been covering the team. Like, it hasn't been a money issue. Like, the lack of sustained success and some of the total failure that they've had along the way, it's not because they're cutting corners to save a few bucks here and there. They just haven't spent the money properly. And that problem has been compounded over and over and over again.
So this weekend, a couple unorthodox candidates, perhaps. Todd Monken, the Ravens coordinator. Brian Flores, the Vikings defensive coordinator. Flores kind of known as an intimidating presence, Monken kind of an in-your-face personality. Both guys don't fit the profile of your typical McCaskey employee. What do you think of their chances, Brad, and do you think that they have reputations around the league that would scare off the Bears?
Yeah, I hope the Bears aren't – I hope none of what they're doing in this process has been clouded by, like, reputation or –
right.
We heard this about this guy. Like, if that's the case, what are you doing talking to the guy? Like, if you're going to have a, if your opinion's going to be shaded a little bit from the jump, what are you even doing? Monken's had just extraordinary amount of success. At various stops, super creative. I think he's really interesting for them to talk to. Can he make that jump to head coach? We mentioned it when his name came up, I think it was at the beginning of the week. He's been a head coach before. It was at Southern Miss, I believe is where it took place. But he's been in that role before. Is he ready to do that in the NFL? Will that play to his strengths? You know, I don't know the answers to those questions. In terms of Flores, had an awful lot of success, but guys, the Bears have got a gap that they've got a bridge between Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. Caleb Williams and other quarterbacks in the NFC and the NFL, and I just don't know that knowing that they got to make up that ground, that they would go with a defensive head coach. You can't rule them out, but I think Flores or any coach with a defensive background is a real underdog at this point with Mike Vrabel off the board and hired by the Patriots.
Yeah, I wonder, and this is a curious question, I suppose, but the fact that Todd Monken is from here, is that a plus or a negative?
In other words, at all?
Well, I mean, the fact that he would have an opinion of the Bears based on, and it's different, I think, with someone like Mike Kafka because he's so much younger. That, you know, this is a guy that probably has heard more Bear stories or knows more Bears background just based on his age.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably wondering, based on his age, he's probably wondering if they spend money at Halasol, right? Like, he would be curious about that. But I don't think local ties probably plays into this. I would hope not. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out because they've got to get it right. The quarterback's got to be a player, right? Look at the eight teams that remain in the playoffs right now and stack them up in whatever order you want in terms of, I think these three or four have the best shot of winning it all. And I mean, the quarterback plays just, it's elite, right? And it's year in and year out. It's week in and week out. And the Bears didn't get there this season with Williams, and that's okay. Like, it's tough for a rookie coming into the league, but it's not going to be okay 24 months from now, right? If you haven't arrived at that point, good luck figuring it out. The odds are really, really stacked against you if you're that deep in your career to emerge then as an elite quarterback.
I agree with that. I understand where you're coming from. I also think it's interesting to look at the eight teams left and realize that five of them have your proverbial, air quotes, defensive head coach. And you look at the Chiefs, Rams, and Eagles being the teams that fit the criteria that we're talking about, head coach with the quarterback, and that symmetry with Andy Reid and Sean McVay and Nick Sirianni with their quarterbacks. So I don't know if that is relevant to the Bears' situation. I don't know if it gives them evidence to go one way or another. But if they don't hire the, quote, offensive-minded head coach, there is evidence that you can still have successful seasons, get deep in the playoffs, if you hire the right play caller.
Yeah, you've got to get the right play caller, and you got to get the right coach that's going to get this guy right, because if you do, your offensive coordinator is going to leave at some point, which it would be. I mean, remember when the Bears had that like 6-week stretch under Luke Getsy when that became the popular topic? Like, oh my God, people are going to come for Luke Getsy as a head coach. What will they do then? it would be a phenomenal problem for the Bears to have at some point in the future. Is their offensive coordinator got poached by another team because their quarterback was so good? Like, dream about it, folks. Don't be weary. Oh my, the sky's falling. What are we going to do? Like, that would be an amazing problem for them to have at Halas Hall. They'd trade a lot of stuff that they've gone through to be in that position. So, but the quarterback's got to be right. Like, you've got to get the coaching for him to be this elite talent, this guy who's the top prospect that's come around in two or three or four or five years at the position. Like, he's got to perform at that level. He was not at that level this season. The the help around him wasn't at the appropriate level. Now they're fighting time. Again, you go too far into a young quarterback's career where it's just kind of, good this week, not good that week. They don't emerge from the wilderness of mediocrity deeper into their career to become elite quarterbacks. That's really, really difficult to do.
I got to ask you, the games this weekend, are they, I mean, this is usually the best weekend. This could be a lot of fun. The Baltimore Buffalo game looks like it's going to be sensational. But who do you think, I mean, is it round up the usual suspects? Do you believe that this is kind of preordained a little bit? Do you know who's going to win, in your opinion?
No, I don't think it's preordained. I'm hoping you get some big point spreads, and Joe here mm-hmm. will probably have clearer ideas than I do on this. We talked about it Monday or Tuesday, whenever it was. We did not have Super Wild Card Weekend this past weekend. Like, that was can the Rams? I haven't been impressed with Jalen Hurts and the Eagles' passing offense all season. Like, it's just, even when they've been winning, you've looked at it and been like, it just, something's just off a little bit there. Can the Rams on a short week go across the country and hang in that game against Philadelphia? I don't know. They get the veteran quarterback, would lead you to believe maybe they got a shot there. I hope that's a good game. Detroit's defense, we know how many injuries it's had. Can Washington find a way to stay balanced? The Lions have been difficult to run on. Can the Commanders remain balanced to help out the rookie quarterback on the road and stay in that ballgame? I don't know. Detroit kind of looks like a wagon right now. I'm not the first person that would have said that, but Chiefs Texans, I feel like we've seen that game a bunch of times before, and then Sunday night Baltimore Buffalo. I that's going to be fantastic. My question would be, can the Buffalo Bills effectively stop or control the Ravens running game? I think that's the big question I have about that ball game.
Good stuff, Brad. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games and enjoy the Sosa interview.
Yeah, we're gonna have to circle back on that Monday or Tuesday,
Let's
guys.
Do that. I'm looking forward to it.
You're the best, Big Z. Have a great one.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
That's our guy, Brad Biggs, football man from the Chicago Tribune.
Lots of thoughts.